Thank you and good morning. This is a tough position to be in because Trent did a great job and a very colorful and pictorial job of showing you the global perspective. And then Janice did a great job of explaining that this collaboration was formed, these three funded entities were formed to address this from the global to the local level. I have a tough act to follow, but we're going to give it our best shot. I do want to expand initially just a little bit on Janice's comment that while she was reporting on the project as a whole, she felt at some disadvantage because she hadn't actually lived that part of it. So let me share with you that when this partnership, this collaboration, was initially formed, it was formed by our funder, Kellogg, to whom we are much indebted. But imagine this, bringing three entities together who haven't really worked together, don't have a history of collaboration, and telling them, we want you to collaborate all the way through this project. You've all proposed totally different things, and now we want to knit it together and collaborate. So we very jokingly referred to this collaboration as a shotgun marriage at the initial meeting. And I have to say that over time, it really became much more of what I would consider a highly successful and functioning arranged marriage, where somebody had introduced the partners, but it turned out they actually worked quite well together. And for that, I've been eternally grateful. I also want to recognize that several members of the Match Project team are in the audience, and if you'll just raise your hand so people will know they can talk to you at the end. Thank you. Let me begin talking now about our part of this collaboration, which we termed the Match Project. We were very definitely on the end of bringing this message, bringing this activity to the local level. I also need to tell you that Match, and I'll see my colleagues cringe as I tell you this, Match was not the originally proposed name of this project. We had initially sat around my dining room table trying to figure out the best way to name this so that it was a nice acronym and it conveyed something and it would stick in people's minds. And I was thinking about how to do that, and I came up with, how about building infrastructure toward community health? The only problem was that was bitch. And somehow none of them were willing to go there with me. So we renamed it MATCH, Mobilizing Against Threats to Community Health. We felt that still captured the essence without raising eyebrows. The MATCH project is a community-based preparedness initiative. It's at the University of South Carolina, and it is based on the efforts of two entities, really, the Arnold School of Public Health and the Institute for Partnerships to Eliminate Health Disparities. Our mission is to protect the public's health, both now and in the future, and we want to do this by preparing for new and emerging infectious diseases, ensuring that communities, and particularly those communities that are underserved or disenfranchised, are able to mobilize effectively against these threats to community health which we're facing. Our project goals were the following. We wanted to engage our key partners in addressing what we have been talking about all day today, the convergence of animal and human health. We wanted to facilitate the role of minority-serving institutions and foster the partnerships there so that we could enhance the preparedness that needed to occur at the community level. We wanted to produce a capacity-building training initiative that promoted community involvement and also enhanced innovation. And we wanted to promote the development of community-based preparedness projects. Let me just note here that in this election year, you may have heard the phrase or the sentence, all politics are local. Well, I do believe that's true, but I would say that the same is true for disasters. All disasters are local. And the impact of infectious disease outbreaks is profoundly local. And because of this, communities have to be engaged in the whole preparedness project. Our approach was to ensure that we had a broad geographic and appropriate community level immersion. So we went into this project by linking with the network of the 1890 land grant institution, and specifically we engaged their extension services as partners with us in fostering community engagement. The involvement of these extension agents was tremendous. It really helped ensure that there was a community focus to our efforts, and it promoted the meaningful partnerships we were looking for with the local stakeholders. One of the really strong reasons for incorporating the 1890 networks into our project for me was that any of you in health promotion or disease prevention, you know that to get a message to a group, you have to have a trusted messenger bringing that message. A trusted messenger typically is not somebody you never heard of. So within these communities, the folks in the extension divisions at these institutions had already been dealing with the community. They were already the trusted messengers, and having them bring the message made a lot more sense. This is a look at where these 1890 institutions are. I think I need to stop here for just a moment and explain what I mean by an 1890 institution, because most people have never heard that phrase. You may be familiar with the A&M type institution, like a Texas A&M, for example, agricultural and mechanical. Those were the land grant institutions, and in 1842, I believe it was, the Morrill Act was passed, which created this whole emphasis on extension and community engagement, community outreach within those types of institutions. Well, in those days, all of those institutions that were funded were not minority-serving institutions. So it wasn't until 1890 that minority-serving institutions were given the same type of funding legislatively to incorporate this extension and outreach mission. So there are 17 states that have 1890 institutions. These, you will note, are the 17 states which practiced segregation. Alabama actually has two 1890 institutions, Alabama A&M, as well as Tuskegee. When you add that up, there are 18 members of the 1890 network. Now, this partnership aims to do several things, and one was to really focus on what a strong resource this 1890 network is in community engagement. Another is to enhance the involvement of both traditional stakeholders, the usual suspects, as well as non-traditional stakeholders. And we also wanted to capture the promising practices that had been identified through our Kellogg Collaborative and bring those to bear. Specifically, we wanted to bring global issues, global concerns to bear on local action, and to infuse local concerns into the global debate. Whoops, sorry. I feel like I'm missing something here. Okay. So our approach was to ensure a broad geographic reach and really a focus on community level immersion. We engaged this network. I've done this slide. Have I done this slide? Okay, let's focus on the goals then. We've done that slide. I'm going backwards. I'm sorry. Trent just got back from Mozambique. I just got back from Paris. So we are the perfect storm. Okay, this is what I was looking for. This looks at our timeline on this project, which was fairly tight. But one of the most important things that we did happened in the spring of 2007, and that was to go personally, to have someone go to all of the 1890 institutions. And Dr. McCutcheon, if you'd stand up, Dr. McCutcheon was our traveling ambassador to all of the 1890 institutions. We felt it was really important that there be a face and a person that they identified with this initiative. And she was marvelous. She came home with a whole lot of pictures of goat farming, and I am now much better informed about that than I ever was. Dr. McCutcheon, I should say, is a retired professor at another land-grant institution, Clemson University, who is our in-state rival, but we love her anyway. We conducted a formal needs and assets assessment with the 1890 institutions to see what did they need in the way of capacity building and what did they have in the way of assets that they could share with others within the network and with us. The site visits were really the beginning of that needs and assets assessment, and then we moved on to the formal aspects of the needs and assets assessment. This represents the fact that we conducted an online actual survey and followed that up with individual phone conference calls. Then in June, we actually had a meeting. We attended a meeting that was already scheduled for the extension administrators. These folks are really busy, just like all of us. And instead of trying to wedge another meeting that they had to go to into their schedules, we went to where they were already convening and were very graciously allowed time on their agenda to discuss our project and see if they were interested in participating. Well, that led to eventually a training event actually held in Atlanta. And this was the event at which we introduced this community project concept and offered the training that had been identified as essential to creating a common foundation for involvement across the whole network of 1890 institutions. After the training event, the institutions went on to develop their community projects, receiving support and facilitation from our central staff. And it concluded in July when we held a capstone event, also in Atlanta. The multi-level assessment and planning process that we focused on, as I said, began with these site visits to the 1890 institutions and moved on to the more formal aspects of a needs and assets assessment. The needs and assets assessment was largely conducted through an online survey, but some individual follow-ups were needed, and those occurred as well. I talked about the meeting with the extension administrators that was held in Baton Rouge. Coming out of all these first items, what we heard people saying was that they were very interested in partnering and they wanted to be a part of planning what was going to happen with this project. We were delighted with this. I had a small internal fear that what sometimes happens might happen here. People will say they really want to be part of it, and then when you try to engage them, they're busy. But that did not happen in this case. We were so fortunate to be able to engage the extension folks in the actual planning of the entire project. So when you see here a curriculum consultation meeting, this was the fact that we were able to bring in several extension division administrators and outreach workers we hosted them on our campus for 2 days to help plan what the next steps would be and what the actual curriculum of our training event would be. So the curriculum framework was developed in this process. The primary outcome was to increase capacity. We wanted to increase the capacity of the participants in this training to work with their communities on preparation, response, and recovery from threats of new and emerging infectious disease. The participants who design, implement, and evaluate better programs through community engagement will then increase the capacity of their cooperative extension programs and also of the communities that they serve. So just a reminder, the framework that you see here resulted from the curriculum meeting, engaging the institutional representatives, as well as follow-up phone conversations with that group and extensions of that group. So really, the 1890 representatives guided and informed this entire process. The MATCH training event held in Atlanta was attended by representatives from 15 of the cooperative extension programs of the 1890 network. The meetings featured nationally recognized leaders in the field of new and emerging infectious diseases. We were very fortunate at that time to have Dr. Lonnie King, who unfortunately couldn't be with us today, and sent an able representative, and our colleagues from both APHA and Michigan State as participants and presenters. We had a combination of both didactic and interactive sessions, and we focused on everything from the science of new and emerging infectious diseases through health disparities, how to plan, evaluate, and implement programs, risk communication and how to effectively do that, and qualitative research techniques. Now we moved on to what you might call the real meat of this project, and that was the community projects. The institutions who attended that training event in October were then invited to apply for funding. We wanted to infuse funding at the Extension Division 1890 institutional levels. The grant awards were reflective of the extent of the work that was proposed. And you can see that we had awards at various levels. We had a couple of institutions that were not able to attend the training event, and so they were sort of behind the curve in terms of being able to jumpstart their efforts. But to recognize their interest in participation and to at least get them started, we created a new level of funding called Engaged Institutions, and so we got them just a little on the way. In total, we funded these projects to the tune of over $150,000. So then they went out and they did their great work. They worked within their communities, they engaged stakeholders, and they came back. We brought everyone together again in July, again in Atlanta, so that they could share with each other and with us what they had done. This was a highly successful event attended by 68 folks from all 17 or from 17 of the 1890 programs. And this is significant. It wasn't just the folks who worked at the 1890 programs. We invited them to bring their community partners, and we paid for this, which is probably the only way we could have gotten community partners to attend. So this event, as I said, was designed to showcase their work, the work of the 1890 institutions, with their community partners. They reported on the scope of their projects, the goals that they achieved within their projects, what target audiences they reached, what impact they had, and what lessons they learned. And there was a real emphasis on identifying the community level impacts. These capstone sessions focused also on discussions about how we might promote sustainability, defining the cornerstones of success in this project, and also providing opportunities for the 1890 extension programs jointly to create and define the future steps that they would take and that we would take. The outcomes of the project are quite telling. It reminds me a bit of an African proverb that alone we could travel fast, but together we can travel far. I don't think we traveled fast, but we really traveled far in this project. We were able to demonstrate here the strength of the 1890 network as a resource for public health collaboration. And it was interesting to us that there had really not been not a lot of projects. In fact, we think we were perhaps the first where the entire 1890 network actually worked together on a single initiative. And that's a little bit historical. We recognize the synergy among the partners within the Kellogg Collaborative, APHA, Michigan State, and USC. We really saw it come to fruition within our project. We increased the awareness of the unique preparedness needs of these communities, which were underserved and disenfranchised communities. And this is very important to us because these communities are resource limited and they face unique challenges or will face unique challenges in a pandemic situation. Think about it, if all areas are affected, and they would be in a pandemic situation, then outside resources for these semi-isolated often and rural communities aren't really going to be there to support them and back them up. And that makes it incredibly important. They'll have to survive largely on their own efforts. And that's hard to do if you have limited resources to begin with. So we felt that it was very important to really focus on the unique aspects of what preparedness will mean in this type of community. We also increased community mobilization in addressing new and emerging infectious diseases. It was clear to us coming out of this project that it's incredibly important to get communities engaged in the process. They have to prioritize preparedness, and they won't put a priority on it unless we meet them where they are and convince them of the importance of preparedness at their level. This theme that we saw come out of our work, if you're interested in that theme at all, I would ask you to also take a look at another initiative that Kellogg has funded. It's called Redefining Readiness, and the project has been ongoing for several years, conducted by the New York Institute of Medicine. In that, they looked at the fact that, here we've got a threat of, say, pandemic flu, and communities need to respond. So what the government often does is from up here, they tell you what you need to do, which is great, but how do you know they're gonna do it? So the New York Institute of Medicine really looked at this, and think about it. Think about places like New Orleans with Katrina. Huge issue, everybody was told to evacuate. Did everybody evacuate? No. Why not? Well, some of them didn't have any place to go. Some of them didn't have transportation to get there. Some people didn't want to leave their pets. There are all sorts of things that happen at a community level that you have to take into account. So what we found, we feel, is very much in sync with what was found in that other project, Redefining Readiness, and I'd encourage you to take a look at that as well. If you'd like more information on our project, we'd invite you to visit our website. You have the address there. And I also want to brazenly and shamelessly promote another session. At this session, which occurs Tuesday from 12:30 to 2, it will take place in the Convention Center, Meeting Room 16A. You get to hear from the real people who did the work in this project. And I'm talking about the representatives of the 1890 institutions. We have three institutions presenting what they did in this match project: West Virginia State University, North Carolina A&T University, and Florida A&M University. And it will be moderated by a central member of the match project staff, Dr. Sandra Glover, who heads the Institute for Partnerships to Eliminate Health Disparities. So please join us for that on Tuesday, 12:30 to 2, Convention Center, Meeting Room 16A. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Donna. This, for me, this has been a great education about how the global movements, the global changes are going to result in some emerging infectious diseases that are going to have to be coped with at the local level. And I think you've heard firsthand how the Kellogg funding and these projects are going to help with that preparation. There are just a few minutes left. There's not that many people here. I would encourage the presenters to go down in the floor, and I would encourage everyone in the audience to ask questions and get more information, because I think this is a source for all of it. And don't forget the handouts by the door. And thank you for attending.